like to thank everybody for staying around this afternoon. In fact, on behalf of the rest of the presenters for the late afternoon, I would tell you that it is worth your while. So I'm glad you stayed. Anyway, I'd like to talk today about our Rapid Trait Development System, which is a non-transgenic approach to providing plant improvement in canola and, in fact, other plants. Dr. Beetham's name is on the presentation, but he had to go to China for some other business, and so I was able to take it over for him. What I want to do is, first of all, there's probably about three or four of you that know what a CBIS is and what our company is, so I'd like to give you a little background on the company first, talk about our technology, and then more specifically about some commercial progress we've been making in canola, and just a couple comments at the end about the future potential of the technology. CBIS is a developmental stage company. That means a company that doesn't make money yet. We have offices in San Diego. San Diego is our laboratory where almost everybody is located. There are two of us in St. Paul, Minnesota, two of us in Vemeldingen in the Netherlands. We've got about 50 people, which we've more than doubled in the last couple of years because of the progress we've made in our developing our technology and developing new deals. Our core capabilities are in cell biology, molecular biology, and biochemistry. I'm the field guy for the company, and I'm responsible for field testing of the materials that come through the lab. What we look at ourselves as is a trait development company. We want to be developing traits that can be used in crop production, industrial markets, food industry, and things like that. And so that is our focus. No, we're not Monsanto. We're a little smaller than that. Anyway, we've got a number of collaborations with a number of different companies, from ag chem companies, large ag chem companies, to grower groups, to farmer groups. We even have a government as one of our partners. The Flax Council of Canada represents funding from the government of Canada because of issues that happened in flax, where there was contamination of a GM in flax, and they wanted to keep it clean from that, and they thought our technology would be able to do that. So we have got a number of partners we're working with worldwide. Well, so the question is now, what is RTDS, or Rapid Trait Development System? You can see it in the literature. It's referred to things like by names like chimeroplasty and genoplasty, targeted gene repair, oligonucleotide directed mutagenesis. I like to keep it simple. It's targeted mutagenesis. We're actually targeting a piece of DNA in an organism and making a specific change that we want to target. So, you know, just a bit of a background, you know, of course we understand mutagenesis has been around for quite a while. In 2000, the FAO list has over 2,200 cultivars derived directly from mutagenesis program in a number of different plant species. So, and we can see it in dwarf plants, disease resistance, herbicide tolerance, seedless grapes, bigger flowers, all of that are product of mutagenesis. And so it's been around for quite a while. But the question is what about our technology? I mean, we're doing something a little bit different. I'll be a little more specific in a second. And so the question is, okay, what about regulatory? Are you regulated any differently than would be a classic mutagenesis program? Well, the answer is no. We've taken data, we've talked to the USDA, and they've basically said, yes, we agree, your technology is not transgenic, and it is indeed mutagenesis. As such, it does not need to be regulated. So we can develop products, go right directly to the market with those products. So as we look at the progression of things in plant development, plant breeding, we can work our way through this and sort of work toward where we feel RTDS fits in it. Traditional breeding, there are some, you know, it takes time for breeding. Now, granted, there are a lot of tools nowadays that make breeding a lot faster. And the breeders have used tools like traditional mutagenesis, whether it be chemical mutagenesis or other forms, that to find different traits. It's random, it's slow, can't quite get there as quickly as you'd like to in many cases. Well, to solve that issue, some people said, well, what about transgenics? Let's put a piece of DNA from some other organism in there and we'll get to the trait we want. Great, it gets the job done, except there are some issues with that. Very high regulatory costs, consumer acceptance is questionable. Some parts of the world don't accept it. Other areas, they accept it in some things and not in others. So that's an issue. But as we've learned more and more about gene structure and function through our genomic tools and through these studies that have been done in academia, we also provide an opportunity to manipulate those genes that we know what they do. And RTDS is such a tool that we can actually take advantage of that genomic information to be able to manipulate and change those genes in ways that are quite predictable. Well, so what is it? What is it? We call it gene conversion. Now, how does it work? Every time a cell copies DNA, there are mistakes that are made. And cells and organisms have developed procedures over the years to correct those mistakes that are made. It's called mismatch repair. So there are enzymes in the plant that look for mismatches in DNA, in the DNA, and correct those so that the plant doesn't die. What we do is we take advantage of that particular capability in a plant by actually introducing a DNA oligonucleotide into the cell, which guides the change. What it looks like is this. You can see here we develop an oligonucleotide. It's sort of important to know a lot about the gene you're targeting because that oligo has to pair at the site of the gene that you want to change. It's important that the oligo is large enough so that it only pairs in one place, and it's small enough so that it doesn't incorporate into the genome. And so this is about 44 base pairs, 40 or so base pairs, and with one targeted change that we will want to make. When the oligo pairs with the DNA in the organism, it creates a mismatch. That mismatch is recognized by the mismatch repair enzymes. They go through, they change the DNA to the trait as such now that we want it to be. Now, the big challenge when we first started developing and working with this technology is keeping the oligo in the plant long enough for it to facilitate the change. We've done some things to protect the ends and trying to keep it there for a while, but in reality it lasts about 90 minutes, and that's all, before it is destroyed and goes away. There's no DNA that's transferred into to the organism's DNA, so as such, it is a mutagenesis. So, more specifically to this topic is our canola work, and we've been able to develop a system where we start with isolating protoplasts in canola, use standard procedures to take up the DNA into those cells, change those, embed those as such, put them through a herbicide selection if we're looking for herbicide tolerance, and then bring them on into plants. More specifically, if you take a look a little closer, you look for those cell clumps that are growing more vigorously, transfer those, initiate the shoot and roots from those, eventually bring them out into plants. Now, that's all well and good. We've been able to get through that in canola, but the next question is, okay, so how do you validate this thing? Well, obviously, the next thing is you grow it in the greenhouse. So what we did is we looked at a herbicide-tolerant material that we grew in the greenhouse. You can see from left to right here, this is the control on the top. This is the converted line on the bottom. And it's pretty obvious. There's a pretty good difference there. In fact, we started from a no unsprayed all the way to 12 times the field rate. And you notice that the converted line grows quite well, even at 12 times the field rate. Now, I got to be honest. This is sort of a sales picture, because in the class of herbicides that we're looking at here, there are a couple other ones that will start killing it or affecting it at 4x the field rate. But nonetheless, you know, this was one that we were just asking the question because we couldn't seem to kill the stuff. And we said, well, how high do we have to go? We never did find it. We were able, obviously, to have a very stable and very high-performing trait in this case. So then the question is, okay, it works in a greenhouse. does it work in the field? Because that's really answers the question. So what we did is we created a field test in Brawley, California. And we planted, actually, it started out as a just sort of a field trial to see what the yield of this line would be. And then we said, wait a second, we can get better answers than just that. So we sprayed it with herbicide. We basically divided it into plots first and sprayed it with a herbicide. And then we rated them for herbicide damage and took them to yield. This is what the field looked like. It was actually, the middle area was simply an area that our cooperator cut out. He just measured equal distances. He plants on beds. So everything worked out very nicely that we were able to make a very nice, clean trial here. I have a number of different treatments. There are two replicates. These plots are about 210 feet long. So there were large field trials in this case. So we have the sulfonated rear herbicides that we're testing across this. Here's a picture of what we saw early on in the program. In the visual ratings, there was really no difference that was identified between the control and the 1x field rate. We saw a slight yellowing at the 2x rate. That was a little bit in the throat. You can't really see it that well here because now it's grown out. Essentially, it was about 14 days, 10 to 14 days you saw the yellowing. It grew out of it very quickly in that environment. As we took it to yield, it became more interesting. Now, I got to ask you to avoid or to ignore the letters on the side because they're a little bit screwed up. But nonetheless, let me just point it out this way. Here are the treatments that had a 1x rate. Here are the 2x rates. And you notice that spraying herbicide increases your yields. Well, we don't quite buy that. It was a single location. The bottom line and the conclusion that we can make from here is that the control with no herbicide on it was not different, or I should say the sprayed samples were not different. They were not lower than the control. That's what we were most concerned about, that we'd reduce the yield, and indeed we did not in this case. So it appeared that we did have the trait performing at the level it really needed to for us to take this product toward commercialization. So what we were able to do through this study is to basically confirm that our RTDS process successfully targeted and changed this AHAZ locus from wild type to resistant. The resistance was stable, it was inherited normally, greenhouse data was validated in our field trials, and we did follow up with some 2010 trials. Unfortunately, I didn't get all the data in time to pull it together for this presentation, but we actually looked at a hybrid version of this, and it looked quite interesting in the field, but the final data summary is just not in hand yet. We'll have to follow up with that later on. So from a technology perspective, as we look at our RTDS technology, it uses, as I said, natural mismatch repair enzyme systems, which are already in the plant, to change the DNA. It's very precise. It changes just the DNA that we are interested in changing. Another important point is that it changes the endogenous gene. So in other words, when is it expressed and how it is expressed, that doesn't change. We're just changing maybe the protein or the enzyme that gene codes for. It's stable and heritable, quick to market because no regulatory approval is needed. The cost is quite a bit lower, mainly because of the regulatory burden in a transgenic system. The other thing, once an operating system is developed, we can develop many different types of traits, and that is a very positive thing that we can follow up on. It works on everything, on any organism that contains DNA. So that again is one of those exciting things that we're happy with. The last thing, which I actually left off of here as a breeder, is the traits developed with our technology can easily be bred with and bred in the most advanced material. You don't have to be back crossing the traits into your material like you would tend to want to do with transgenics. Finally, future trait targets, really they look like any other company that's working on trait development. The only limitation that our technology does have is that the DNA coding for the trait has to be in the plant. In other words, we can't make a BT using our technology. We could, however, create an insect tolerance, which maybe is similar to an insect tolerance you see in a wild-related species if that homologous gene does occur in the commercial species. So thank you for your time, and I'll be around later to answer any questions.
Since we've only got one more presenter, if we've got some quick questions for Jim, we'll go ahead and take them now.
Yep.
Is this technology commercially available? In other words, can people buy this kits and do this in their own lab?
At this point, it is not commercially available, and we've actually had some history on that. Several years ago, we did some deals with some companies and said, here, you know, try it in your lab. It's a very, very sensitive technology, and then we said, you know, follow A, B, C, D, E, and do it just that way. Everybody thought they could do a little better, and then when they got it, they said, oh, this fails, it doesn't work. And so we've chosen not to commercialize it as such at this point in time. That may happen in the future as we improve the efficiencies and improve the technology, but for today it is not.
Can I follow up on that? Does your company open to collaboration?
Are we open to collaboration? The answer is yes. We are open to collaboration. I showed you a list of the companies that we're actually working, companies and grower groups that we're working with, so we certainly are doing that.
Is protoplast the only way you can really deliver
polyethylene? Protoplast certainly is the most desirable way to do that, but we are also using microcalli and the gun as such to deliver the oligos with some success at this point in time. But it's just much more efficient if you can use a protoplast system, but it's not the only one.
Since you're changing, you're not introducing anything new. You're changing a protein within a plant. And we're learning more and more that a single gene, the expression, the protein, it's not a single gene, a single trait. So therefore, what more are you testing to see that change that you made in that single region? What other
Right. So the question is, you know, if we make a change, are there other things that happen that aren't related to this? And today I would say that we haven't done that because we're targeting fairly simple things. As we've been validating the technology and developing the technology, we're focusing on herbicide tolerance. And they've been fairly well documented in the literature. Single gene, SNP change here, SNP change there, gives me some tolerance. We are working on projects, for example, disease resistance. We're working on a project there. And that certainly is a question that we will want to ask because we're hitting pathways that maybe aren't as well documented, not as clearly.
Anyone else has questions? Y'all can catch him in the background.
Thank you.